A devastating injury for the New England Patriots takes out a major contributor for the rest of the year. Plus, Red Sox second baseman Dustin Pedroia could miss a third of the 2018 season after undergoing knee surgery. And speaking of injuries, the Boston Bruins are pretty beaten up, and it's already showing at the start of their season. I'm Chris Gasper, and this is Season Ticket. Welcome to Season Ticket, a daily podcast from the Boston Globe Sports Department and WBUR, Boston's NPR news station. We begin with news that will be a major blow for the New England Patriots. Linebacker Dont'a Hightower is out for the year with a torn pec. He had been dealing with shoulder and muscular issues, and now we know just how serious the issue is, a real blow to the Patriots' defense. To help me break this down, we now bring in the Globe's Ben Volen, national NFL writer. He's the one who broke this story. Ben now joins us via Skype. Hey, Ben, how are you?
I'm doing a little bit better than Dont'a Hightower and the Patriots defense today, that's for sure.
Yeah, I mean, this is a major, major loss for them. I think if there was one player the Patriots could not afford to lose, it was Dont'a Hightower. He's one of their best communicators. I think he's their best front seven player. The defense was just starting to round into form, or at least look like it after that Falcons victory, and now you have this.
Yeah, no question. This is a big loss. Defensive captain, leader, certainly in the front seven, one of their best pass rushers, solid in the run game. And when you think about all the losses they had from last year, Rob Ninkovich retired, Jabal Sheard and Chris Long didn't come back. You know, they were really counting on Hightower to be a big presence for them on the edge. Now they lost him. They lost third-round pick Derek Rivers. They're starting to get pretty thin up front there, and with the trade deadline looming coming up during the Patriots' bye week, I wouldn't be surprised to see Bill Belichick be very busy and active trying to find at least someone to replace him. You know, the good news, too, though, I guess if you call it good news, they at least have Shea McClellan coming back from injured reserve, David Harris already on the roster, maybe someone who can help out. So they have some bodies, but they're going to need some reinforcements on defense.
Yeah, they're definitely going to need some reinforcements. And look, they were already thin at linebacker, regardless of how they were deploying Hightower, whether it was on the edge or back up off the line as sort of more of a middle linebacker type of guy. They needed him. They just don't have a ton of depth at that position. So where do they go from here?
You know, fortunately, in a way for the Patriots, they're used to playing without Dont'a Hightower. He's already missed two games this year, week two and three. He missed with an injury. And then over the years, he missed, I think, 16 games in his first five seasons with various injuries. He's a guy who's always kind of banged up. Unfortunately, this is the first time he's ever suffered a season-ending injury. But they do have some experience playing without Dont'a Hightower. He'd only played 50% of the overall snaps this year. So, you know, I think the communication is going to fall heavily on Kyle Van Noy. Alandon Roberts is also someone who could be used in that situation. And I think Devin McCourty's role really becomes important. He's the guy who has really become the leader of the defense. He's only missed one snap all season, you know, big time communicator and a leader back there, plays all kinds of roles, whether it's deep safety or in the box. To me, Devin McCourty takes on an even bigger role now.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with you there. It's definitely going to be a challenge without Hightower. And this was one of the questions, Ben, when they signed Hightower to this extension in the offseason. He was a free agent. He was shopping himself around. He got a four-year deal from the Patriots, about $35.5 million and substantial guarantees. The question was, is this a guy you can rely on to be out on the field? And yes, this is his first injury where it's a season-ending injury, but this is now part of his story, this idea of not necessarily being the most durable linebacker in the league. So it's not just about this year, but moving forward, is Dont'a Hightower a guy you want to count on if you're Bill Belichick?
Well, I think obviously it's someone that they knew that was going to be a possibility that he's going to miss some time. As you said, he's had durability issues his entire career. Football is a very violent sport, and he plays one of the most violent positions, and he's just always suffering little dings and nicks. He did sign a big four-year contract in the offseason, but the way it was laid out, obviously the Patriots knew that durability was going to be an issue. A lot of incentives based on him being healthy and playing a lot of snaps and in the game and making Pro Bowls and All Pros. And even though it was a four-year, $43 million deal, it was really only $19 million guaranteed over the first two seasons. So he's, you know, guaranteed to be with the Patriots at least one more year. But the way the contract was structured, obviously, I think the Patriots knew that there was a chance that he wouldn't, you know, be a big piece of the defense at some point during the season, that he might be in and out of the lineup. It's a costly injury for him financially. He misses out on about $500,000 of roster bonuses now this year. He had $1 million incentive for All Pro and Pro Bowl, and then he had $1 million incentive for playing snaps. So it's going to cost him the chance to make an extra $2.5 million this year. And, you know, the Patriots, they have a deep defense. You know, they weren't counting on Hightower to be a 100% snap guy. They still have Van Noy and Cassius Marsh and Lawrence Guy and Dietrich Wise, Trey Flowers. They still have some good bodies there. Shea McClellan's coming back. But obviously, you know, the Hightower, with his knowledge of the defense and his penchant for making big plays, let's not forget, in both Super Bowls, he came up with key plays in the fourth quarter to help spring the Patriots to win. There's no question that this is going to be a big loss for the Patriots.
Yeah, absolutely. Big loss for Dont'a Hightower. Financially, big loss for the Patriots on the field. All right, Ben, thanks for breaking that down for us. We definitely appreciate it. You can find Ben on Twitter. He's at Ben Volen. Thanks again, Ben.
Thanks a lot, Chris.
Well, okay, the Pats aren't the only team dealing with injuries. The Boston Bruins, they have health issues of their own. The Bruins off to a 3-3-1 start this year. They play tonight at home against the San Jose Sharks and old friend Joe Thornton. But they've been fighting injuries and fighting the puck a little bit. An uneven start to the year for the Bees. Joining me now to break this down is Fluto Shinzawa. He is the national hockey writer for the Boston Globe. Fluto, welcome to Season Ticket.
Hi, Chris. Thanks for having me.
Oh, it's a pleasure. It's great to have you in here to break this down. As I mentioned, the Bruins 3-3-1 on the year. It's been an uneven start. The offense has been pretty good. They're sixth in the NHL, 3.43 goals per game. But the defense hasn't been so great, 3.71 goals per game. That's the fifth most allowed in the NHL. What has the issue been so far for the Bruins in terms of not being consistent in their own end?
Well, of course, it starts with the goaltending. Tuukka Rask started the year as a mixed bag. His saves percentage was down. Goals against was up. Part of it was on him. He let in some goals that he usually stops when he's feeling good. But I think part of the issue, Chris, is that they're changing systems. It's a 1-1-3 that they're playing versus Claude's 1-2-2. That means that the Ds are a little bit more aggressive. The forwards are looking, once they get the puck, to go on the attack right away. So what does that mean for a goalie? You're probably left out in the open a little bit more. You're a little bit more compromised. So I think there's been a little bit of Tuukka and the defense and the forwards not being on the same page. And then he gets hurt. And then you have to bring in Khudobin, who was a question mark as a number two. And then you throw him in as a number one. Well, yeah, he got a win against Vancouver. But then Buffalo, it got real squirrely at the end. And a real varsity performance by a good number one shuts the door when it's 4-1, not let it get to 5-4 in overtime. So, and then you look at the personnel, Torrey Krug, he's been really fighting it. He's been, there's nowhere to hide for him. So you're left with Char, 40 years old, and McAvoy, 19 years old, as the year real two dependable defensemen against Buffalo. So mixed bag so far, for sure.
Yeah, and you mentioned there Tuukka Rask, the injury, the concussion he suffered two Wednesdays ago in practice as rookie winger Anders Bjork sort of ran into him at practice, and that forced Anton Khudobin, the backup goalie, to play the last couple of games. And as you mentioned, a rebound control has been an issue for Khudobin. When I look at Tuukka, he's one of the highest-paid goalies in the league. And regardless of the system, to me, he's one of those guys like a Henrik Lundqvist with the Rangers or like a Carey Price. And look, I know Montreal is off to a horrible start up there with old friend Claude Julien, former Bruins coach who's now coaching the Canadiens, the second time he's coaching the Canadiens. But Tuukka, to me, is a guy that if you have a young team and this is what they've decided to do, he should be a stabilizing force. Like, I don't want Tuukka to just put up the numbers he puts up and be a Vezina Trophy-winning goalie when the system is suited to him. I need him to be able to backbone the entire team, and especially when it's a younger team trying to be more offensive. Isn't that why you pay for a goalie like Rask?
No question. He's right now he's the third highest paid goalie. You got Lundqvist making more and Bobrovsky making more, and he's not Lundqvist is having a down year so far. But is he the third best goalie in the league? No way. You might even, if you look back at last year, questionable to even call him a top 10 goalie just because of the way he played. And what the Bruins have believed is that he's run out of gas. The last 3 years, he's had to play too much just because, okay, the Bruins are behind it. They need points. What do you do? What does a coach do? Always goes to your most dependable goalie because the number two can't play. hasn't been good enough. Khudobin was waived last year, sent down to Providence just because he couldn't play. So is that the issue? If that is the issue, okay, then you have to play Khudobin more this year and manage Tuukka. He's best 58, 59, 60 starts. If that's the way it is, that's the way it is. If he's going to get good performance out of Tuukka at that plateau of games, then so be it. But the real problem they have is, okay, well, what if it's not the workload? What if he's just regressing and declining in his career? 30 years old, it probably shouldn't happen at this point of his career. But you look at the numbers; they haven't been good enough, not to his standard, not to the team standard, especially compared to the Vezina year. So yeah, maybe it's a matter of workload. If they manage him right and he gets his reps and he feels good, he's not a big guy, so he tends to wear down. That's been the thinking. But the real concern is, okay, what if the decline is for real? Then they've got an issue.
Yeah, I mean, it sounds like Tuukka is sort of the ride or die goalie for this team, and obviously, as I mentioned, he's missed time with that concussion. There have been other injuries, though, that have affected this team, Fluto, particularly two veteran guys. David Krejci now dealing with a back injury, and we were told by Bruins coach Bruce Cassidy that he's not going to play against the Sharks tonight, and he won't play Saturday against the Kings. That's one of your top offensive threats, and he's not available. Adam McQuaid with the broken leg, he's a guy that could steady the defense, a good stay-at-home defenseman. How much of this start to the season is injuries, and how much of this is just that they're not good enough?
Huge. You look at, especially when you look at the personnel that has been missing. First five games, Patrice Bergeron, best player, no question, hands down. And what Patrice does is when you lose that, it's just the trickle down effect is unbelievable. You lose your number one center. A real good power play bumper right in the middle there on the first unit, go-to penalty kill guy, and then what happens? Everybody has to elevate, and Krejci, not a number one center at that point. You're missing David Backes, who, yeah, he's fought it, and he's 33, and he's overpaid for what he does, but he's still a veteran guy who can be hard on the puck. They didn't have that for the first five games, and now he's behind it. He's trying to catch up with his conditioning and game shape. That's going to be tough for him.
He had the
diverticulitis.
Diverticulitis.
Yeah. So, and that's not, I mean, he's still dealing with issues.
Yeah, it's
so,
a serious stomach ailment.
Oh, for sure. And for a guy, he had to be in the hospital for 5 days. No exercise. Any pro athlete is going to have a hard time coming back from that. And then Ryan Spooner, he's out for a month. And granted, Ryan wasn't performing even strength, but he's still a pretty good power play guy. So it all trickles down. But injuries are going to be an issue for not just this team, but for all 31 teams. So, yeah, it's up to the Bruins. And right now, they haven't had the depth in terms of guys who can emerge when Krejci is not available, Bergeron, McQuaid, the depth players. Postma we saw for the first time. He's been okay. O'Gara was okay. But then is Tim Schaller a top six player? No. And that's the reality.
That's
guys
him.
Are going to get hurt. It's going to continue. Sure, they've had bad luck. But that's reality.
I think what's interesting to me about this Bruins season is that the sort of storyline for the season was the youth movement.
Sure.
Guys like Anders Bjork and Jake DeBrusk, the two wingers, young wingers who are riding on the first two lines, and bringing in Charlie McAvoy for a full season after we saw what he could do in the playoffs last year against the Ottawa Senators. I thought that this is actually, we're getting closer to the team that GM Donnie Sweeney wants. And I
yes.
thought he bought a little bit of breathing room with the Jacobs family, the owners of the Bruins last year, by making the playoffs. I feel like we're getting closer to that team with the youth movement. There'll probably just be some bumps in the road, though.
Oh, no question. And what do you expect? McAvoy, 19 years old. DeBrusk, I think he's 21 now. Bjork, 21. But all rookies, right? And what do you expect, guys? Bjork, he could have been a senior at Notre Dame right now, and he comes in the league and he's like, whoa, I'm on the first line with Bergeron and Marchand, and I have to play against the top players every shift. That's not easy. DeBrusk, second line player. McAvoy getting big time minutes. And yeah, he's a prodigy. He's going to be outstanding if he's not already. But you fold in those guys, and then the other night, Robbie O'Gara, he's in for the first time. That's a lot of first-year pros, or first-year rookies in the same game. And, of course, they're not in the sweet spot of their careers yet. That's going to take time. So the Bruins' issue is that, okay, these guys, if they pan out and they're going to be good, okay, it's going to take them a few years, but then in a few years, where's Bergeron? Where's Krejci? That's the real issue, is that they haven't had enough of those mid-tier players to complement the real high-end, the Bergeron, the Marchand, the Rask, those players. And yeah, Marchand's still in that sweet spot of his career, but Bergeron, nagging injury. Krejci, nagging injury. Bergeron, 32. Krejci, 31. Backes, 33. And of course, Chara, 40 years old. So there's this gap between the real promising rookies and the Bjork, DeBrusque, McAvoy, and then they've got some other young guys coming. But can they accelerate their development in time to kind of catch up to Bergeron and stay within his career segment? That's a tough ask.
Yeah, that is a tough ask. And, you know, David Pastrnak, he's still a young guy.
Of course, yeah.
He got the contract extension. He has produced, and that's been big for the Bruins, Fluto. Is there anybody down at Providence? I know, again, we talked about this. The Bruins have made a big deal about restocking the pucks pipeline, so to speak, and getting the prospects. Is there anybody at Providence who's ready, like a Bjork or DeBrusque, to come up here
yes.
and maybe help this team?
Yes. Jacob Forsbacka-Carlson, who was one of their three second-round picks in 2015. He was injured at the start of camp, so that set him back. But this is a guy out of BU. They sign him. He gets in one game last year, the regular season finale against Washington. Just overwhelmed at that point, but what do you expect? But this is a very smart player. The comparable is Bergeron.
Wow, that's a great comp.
Absolutely, yeah, right shot center.
I'll take that.
Smart, cerebral player, can pick things up and adapt. So he just needs reps. But I was talking to a scout last week, and he was wondering, why isn't Forsbacka-Carlson up at this point, especially with Spooner out? So there's a case to be made there. Maybe he can help, but at the same time, again, second, he could be a junior at BU. So you throw him into the fire right now, especially with the team struggling, and he doesn't feel comfortable right away. Well, then what does that do to his confidence versus down in Providence? He's been playing on the first line and tearing it up.
Great stuff. That's Fluto Shinzawa of the Boston Globe. You can find him. He's at Globe Fluto. He'll be at the Bruins game tonight. And it's a pretty good little stint here for the Bruins. Five of the next six games here at home, and that's part of a stint of seven of eight games at home. So hopefully they can make a little bit of hay here. Thanks again, Fluto.
My pleasure.
All right, coming up next on Season Ticket, he's a fan favorite and a veteran the Red Sox rely on, but can Dustin Pedroia make a comeback after knee surgery? We'll talk about that next. Welcome back. A quick note, if you like Season Ticket, be sure to subscribe to us on Apple Podcasts, or if you have an Android phone, you can check us out on Stitcher or Google Play. Subscribing is the best way to make sure you get the latest episode as soon as it's available. All right, we're going to switch things over to the Red Sox now, and one of their team leaders underwent surgery on Wednesday, Dustin Pedroia. He underwent surgery on his knee. Technically, they're calling it a cartilage restoration. I'm not quite sure what that is, but we're going to bring in Alex Speer of the Boston Globe to break that down for us. He now joins us via Skype. Alex, how are you?
I'm great, Chris. How are you?
Good, good. So Dustin Pedroia had this surgery. They're calling it cartilage restoration. How significant a surgery is this for Dustin Pedroia? We know that they're saying that he's going to miss. He's going to be out for 7 months, and he could miss the first 2 months of the season.
Right. Well, once you're getting into that, that kind of indicates to you when you're talking about lopping off basically a third of the season, that indicates that it's a significant surgery. There are a couple of different ways that a cartilage restoration can happen. Sometimes athletes get microfracture surgery in which a number of holes are drilled in the cartilage as a means of trying to promote healing. And there's also a procedure that is along the lines of the one that Pedroia's teammate Stephen Wright went through, when they actually take cartilage from a cadaver and graft it to your own cartilage in order to kind of create cartilage growth. This addresses a significant problem. We saw Pedroia playing this year. He missed a third of the season this year and was a drastically reduced player at times when he was on the field as a result of all of the knee problems that he had emerging as a result of this degenerative cartilage issue that he had, one that was certainly not helped by that hard slide that everyone saw from Manny Machado in April, but a condition that he entered into the year with. You know, his surgery last year, which was merely kind of a cleanup of his knee, reflected the same kind of long-term issues. So this is something that Dave Dombrowski said during the year that the Red Sox would have to manage for the rest of Dustin Pedroia's career. If they are able to have a successful restoration of his cartilage, then that's one pretty important means of addressing it going forward. But it is a significant surgery when you're talking about, you know, kind of a best case scenario being a May return.
When you look at it, you know, Dustin Pedroia is certainly no stranger to surgery. This is at least his seventh surgery that we know of, going back to 2007. He's a guy that obviously plays as hard as anybody, and that's why people love him here in Boston. I mean, he goes all out all the time, and that's one of the things that has made him a fan favorite. But when you look at it, in the last four seasons, there's been just one season he's played more than 140 games. That was 2016. He played 154 games. He was great that year. 318, 15 homers, 74 runs batted in. How much can you rely on Dustin Pedroia at this point as a 34-year-old coming off knee surgery, Alex?
It's a really interesting question, because one thing that's remarkable about him is that typically he's always playing hurt, and often and most of the time finds a way to be relatively productive despite that. Like some of the adjustments that he was able to make this year in order to be very productive in the month of July when he was the Red Sox best hitter were a little short of remarkable. Like his athleticism, his body control is so good that he's able to kind of figure out how to adjust to the various maladies that he's always fighting through. That said, you know, as you age as an athlete, it becomes harder and harder to remain on the field and maintain high levels of productivity when you're trying to deal with those injuries. So, you know, the Red Sox had talked about managing his playing time a little bit more aggressively in the last couple of years, really. They hadn't done a ton in order to manage that playing time significantly over the last couple of years. You know, they had, as you pointed out, in 2016, he played more than 140 games, and he ended up being a drastically reduced player in the final month of the season after being very good through the first 5 months as a result of some of those knee injuries. This year, they had him playing kind of all the time. They weren't building in regular or significant amounts of rest for him. You know, to me, at this stage of his career, I don't know, I think you do need to start figuring out more aggressive ways of giving him time off. Even though he's a more valuable asset than any of the alternatives they have at second base in their organization as of right now.
Yeah, I agree with you there. I think if you're Red Sox president of baseball operations, Dave Dombrowski, you can't just go into the 2018 season and say, we only have to worry about filling in for Dustin Pedroia for 2 months. We only need a replacement for 2 months. I think you have to have a player there that you feel like can be a starting caliber player for your team. Someone like Eduardo Nunez, who was acquired in a trade this year and was great on the time he played with the Red Sox before he suffered a knee injury of his own. I think you have to go into this year and have another guy on the roster who is a starting caliber second baseman. And I don't see that guy already on the roster. I don't think it's Brock Holt. I don't think it's Devin Marrero, a guy you mentioned. I don't think it's Marco Hernandez, who was a favorite of John Farrell's. Zhu-Wei Lin maybe could grow into that role. Certainly his offense, I think you would agree, Alex, was unexpected this year based on his career profile. I just don't think you can go into this and say, yeah, we're going to get, you know, classic Dustin Pedroia coming off this knee surgery once we get past the first 2 months of the season.
So this plays into this. This is a really interesting kind of dilemma for the Red Sox because we saw something similar play out in the 2017 season where the Red Sox traded away a lot of their third base depth. They traded away Yoan Moncada. They traded away Travis Shaw, more significantly, right? Because he was a proven major league ready third baseman, and said, we'll be okay with Pablo Sandoval. We believe that the surgery that he's gone through will have him able to perform at levels that exceed what we most recently saw from him. That went catastrophically wrong for the Red Sox and left them kind of scrambling throughout the season until Rafael Devers had his own remarkable transformation and emergence and became what looks like, you know, a potential star. But for having a 20-year-old who was ready to make the jump from Double A to the big leagues, and that's not what they thought they had at the beginning of the year, the Red Sox were in deep, deep trouble at third base. So now the question is, do they approach things similarly with Pedroia and with the second base position and cavalierly say that essentially the same cast of people who they were looking to in order to provide depth behind Sandoval at third base is going to provide adequate production in place of Pedroia for those first 2 months of the season and then give you alternatives in case, one, he struggles, two, he needs regular rest, or three, he ends up being injured with, whether it's the knee or whether it's something else, because, you know, history says that there's a decent chance that Pedroia will incur an injury at some point during his coming season. So do the Red Sox, so you point out a guy like Nunez. There are other interesting names that you can explore. For instance, at the trade deadline, the Red Sox talked with the Tigers about the possibility of acquiring Ian Kinsler as someone who would be able to help at both second base, the position that he's played for the vast majority of his career, and third base. That was at the time before they acquired Nunez. So, you know, he has 1 year left on his deal. It's a relatively favorable contract for a team. He would be an interesting one to acquire. There are other guys like that who have versatility, but who would represent guys with higher offensive upside than what they have in-house in trying to provide depth behind Pedroia.
Now, Pedroia still has 4 years and about $56 million left on the extension, the 8-year extension he signed in 2013. And I'll be honest with you, as much as I love Pedroia as a player, at the time when they signed that extension, I was not in favor of it, Alex. I thought that what's happening right now could be an issue for a guy that plays so hard and for a guy that is a little bit injury-prone. Let's just call it what it is. 4 years is a long, long time. Do you think he'll be able to finish out this contract, number one? And we were talking about a short-term replacement for Dustin Pedroia this year, but should they be looking for a long-term replacement as well?
I think that would be a little bit premature. Look, there's a reasonable history of guys coming back from cartilage restoration and from microfracture-type surgeries and being quite successful. You know, I think that we do know that Pedroia is going to do absolutely anything that he can in order to position himself to be a valuable contributor to the team. I don't think that we're looking at a guy for whom the next step is retirement.
Yeah, it's a good point. I mean, you know, look, Dustin Pedroia has been defying the odds his entire career as an undersized guy, and he has had people who have dismissed him and doubted him. And look, he's proven a lot of those people wrong, and I'm sure that he's out there sort of to do it again. But the Red Sox have to have some sort of insurance policy for Dustin Pedroia this year. And as you pointed out, Alex, it makes for an awfully interesting offseason. Not that the Red Sox offseason isn't interesting enough. It's always interesting. But how they handle this, and also sort of how Pedroia responds to it, because Pedroia is the last guy. He's sort of like Tom Brady. He's the last guy on earth that wants anybody taking his position or taking his playing time at that position. But the Red Sox do have to protect themselves. Alex, thanks so much for coming on Season Ticket.
Oh, a pleasure, Chris. Thanks for having me.
You can find Alex Speer on Twitter. His handle is at Alex Speer. And that's it for this edition of Season Ticket. Thanks for listening. Remember, if you liked us, be sure to tell a friend and make sure you subscribe on Apple Podcasts or Stitcher. I'm Chris Gasper. We'll see you tomorrow.